Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Start in the name of God, Clement and Merciful. I thank you all for being here this evening to listen to what I have to say. It's a topic that the topic of Islamic political philosophy that often comes up in today's media in a context that is least favorable for its discussion. Often we hear reductive ideologies such as that of organizations such as Al-Qaeda, Islamic Jihad, and all these other groups that are sort of quote-unquote terrorists and doing all sorts of nasty things. And it's very unfortunate because it's within the media, then again, the discussion of jihad and such like constructs are associated with that mentality, that thinking, which doesn't really do justice to the topic as such. Then one really thinks that, this is some kind of archaic, misplaced notions from a certain sphere of time and space that are either no longer relevant or really, really dangerous for the world. And so, this is why I think it is important to look at the principial level, look at exactly what is the source of Islamic political philosophical thinking. What does Quran say about politics? Quran doesn't, like I said, on one hand, doesn't leave anything undiscussed, which is where it also is the seminal source of Sharia, the sacred law of Islam, which leaves hardly anything unregulated in life. Even though it is a human application that has used divine sources to make this, the body of law that we call a sacred law or divine law. Now, the Quran itself will provide you with all those principles on the one hand and hardly leave any domain outside of its discussion sphere. But at the same time, it does not say that such and such type of government is the ideal form of government. It says nothing about monarchy, it says nothing about democracy, it says nothing about democracy, it says nothing about oligarchy, it says nothing about any kind of political rule that we are accustomed to thinking as political philosophers in the world today. We're accustomed to thinking according to these types of rule, and then they are corresponding to ideologies, because the modern world, the modern mass society, is a society of ideologization. And so things are then ideology is not something that has been around for a very long time. In the study of comparative study of ideologies, we see that this is something that is new upon the change that took place in the world that converted this world from being a community-based society to a mass society. What Ferdinand Tennies has called a shift from Gemeinschaft to Gesellschaft, as a community in which the ties are primordial, into society where we no longer have primordial ties. If you lived in New York City, you may live in a building for 20 years and may not know your next door neighbor. Whereas in a small village somewhere in rural Punjab, not only the neighbors will know each other, they will also know who is the father and the mother of that animal who is next door. They will have a very intimate knowledge of each other. So this shift into a modern mass society is something that is producing the older forms of thought into ideologies. So the corresponding rules that we, the political philosophers, are accustomed to thinking are not there in the Quran. The Quran doesn't say anything about what type of rule is the most ideal type of rule. So what does Quran then say as far as politics is concerned? What is the Quranic position on human politics? It is very simple, and it's also not so simple. The simple element that we can say that Quran, besides being so many other things, is also called Kitab al-Insaf. It's a book of justice. And so without justice, there is no harmony. And hence, Quran is not, does not only, it's not a pacifist document. It is also Kitab al-Aman. It is a book of peace. Islam, religion, comes from Salama, which is peace. God himself is Ya Salam, he is peace. So the notion that this holy book, besides so many other things, is also a book of justice, then prompts us to know what is justice. The Quran itself is a document that's the easiest for a believer, and it's most difficult for a scholar. The Quran is a book which is very easy for a believer, it's very difficult for a scholar. So this is a scholarly enterprise as far as you know, when we're looking, searching for answers to the existentialist predicament and dilemmas of human beings. So this is what the Quranic position is on the foundation of political thinking for the Muslims that was to continue for the years to come. Now we go back, move further to the example of the Prophet. Now the Prophet himself also was two things in one. He was a spiritual leader of the community, and he was also the political leader of this community. The spiritual leadership of the Prophet precedes his political leadership. He was a normal, regular person who just had a certain experience in the cave. And this Archangel Gabriel comes to him and speaks to him, say, Iqra bismi rabbika, recite the name of the Lord. That's the beginning of prophecy. But he is not accepted and invited as a political leader and founder of a state, and gives the paradigms of a political society until he goes to Medina. So this comes later, and so his prophecy precedes his politics. And so in political philosophy, then the second place where we look, other than the Quran, we look at the example of the Prophet. So the Prophet himself was a fusion of temporal and spiritual powers, in a way that Christ, Sayyidina Isa alayhi salatu wasalam, was not. The Christian tradition was render unto God that is God, render unto Caesar that is Caesar. The city of God, the city of man. Which is why from the very early, there were basis for a certain type of secularity based on separation of church and state that arose in Christianity. But that type of secularity was not there in Islam because there was no church. And because of its religion being unity, the Muslims being the Wahidun, the people of the unity, the things eventually had to be unified in its ultimate summit in God and into the reflection of God, Zilla Ilahi, the shadow of God. Emperors up until the very recent times are always called Zilla Ilahi, the shadow of God. And so this notion was also there in Europe, it was also there in the Hindu kingdoms, it was also there in many other religious traditions, not only Islam. So this is the old order of things. Now in the Covenant of Medina, Misaq-e Medina, that becomes a document for the Prophet to become the statement, there are great examples of how he dealt with problems. First of all, justice and fusion of powers, and the person who knew most, who is respected most, is the one who is fit to rule. Plato was asked the same question, who is the person who is most fit to rule? And his answer was the same. This is many, many years before the arrival of Islam onto the world scene. Plato said also, well, who should rule more? Who is the most important person to rule? The one who knows most. The human passion, the insaniya, is for all. And so these confining paradigms of modern thinking have become so divisive, which has led to so many wars. And even short of war, cold wars for the sake of resources. Colonial wars happening inside of Europe, but also playing out because of colonies, because everybody wants a piece of the pie. They want to become richer and fight with each other. The German says, you know, the Deutschland overall, my nation is above all. The Englishman says the same thing. The Frenchman says the same thing. And in the process, they're disrupting Africa and Asia and destroying a remarkably delicately balanced forms of life of indigenous people that eventually we might have to return to if we think ecologically. And if we think in terms of justice to the world, justice to the earth. So So the paradigms of justice that come to us from the older tradition, and which is why there's so much interest today in Department of Religious Studies on the issue of ecology and environment, on the issue of the notions of justice, distributive justice and ecological justice, justice to indigenous people and so forth, are because of these reasons. Because this paradigm, the modernist paradigm itself, is either imploding or is about to implode and fall on some head. And I think it was one of the sages of the current times who said that modernity itself is so full of inner contradictions that it's like a beheaded rooster that is frantically moving around before it drops dead. And I think that the older systems of philosophy, the older systems of wisdom, rootedness in spiritual paradigms, we can learn only not to become human beings with restraint, using that what we need, and harnessing, shrinking the human ego and our wants and desires, so that everybody can fulfill their needs, and so that there could be global justice and environmental justice and peace and harmony. Right? I'm sorry, this was very little time, I almost took a little less than an hour on this, but perhaps we can discuss more in the question and answer sessions.